Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
Mandy's specialist told her that every successful pregnancy is a miracle. And it's a feeling you'll know if you've delivered a healthy little baby. It's also a feeling you might know more intimately if you've had a miscarriage that for some reason the gods were not smiling on you, the miracle was not for you. It's an experience that can trigger an intense grieving. And as miscarriage often occurs in the early weeks of pregnancy, before you've even announced that happy news, that grief can be intensified by the isolation of silence from friends and workmates who knew no better. How do you look after yourself on that road? If you've been through this, dads and mums, I'd love to hear from you about how you got through and what helped you. The number is 1300 222 720, or you can send me a text 0437 922 720. As I said, I'm interested in hearing from mums and dads today because we quite often forget dads in this process. But of course, they'll be going through the grieving process and it may be a different grieving process. So we'd love to hear from you. 1300 222 720. With me today is Mandy, a 35-year-old woman who's recently been through this experience. And also Dr. Jade Bilardi. She is a senior research fellow in the Central Clinical School at Monash University, and her primary area of interest centres on improved miscarriage support for men and women and their and partners and family. Andy, let's start with when you first found out you were pregnant.
So we were going to our first ultrasound appointment with our obs, and we were excited. I was very aware of miscarriage and how common it was, and it always played in the back of my mind, but I thought, wow, we had gotten to this spot of first ultrasound, and we went in and we met with the midwife, and it was exciting. She was talking about what the next couple of months would look like for us and what appointments we would need to book in, what tests we would need. And we went in to see the doctor following that, and he performed an ultrasound.
And who did you tell when you found out that exciting news? Like, was it difficult to know who to tell first and when to tell them?
You know, I told my partner. Obviously, he was the first one I told. I performed a pregnancy test. It was something like 6 o'clock in the morning, and he was the first one. And I told my mum and my best friend on the other side of the world, because I knew that if anything was to happen, that they would provide the support that I would need.
Now, I think you said you had... I think you told me off air that you knew someone who had lost a baby to stillbirth. So I think you said there was excitement, but also you were well aware of the fact that it doesn't always go right. Pregnancies don't always go right. So how quickly did you become really attached, I suppose, with that idea of being pregnant?
Yeah, quickly, to be honest with you. At first when I actually took 3 pregnancy tests that day because I wanted to be sure. I couldn't allow myself to get excited. And that's kind of sad in a way because it was the first time I was pregnant. My partner and I had been trying, and I still couldn't allow myself to be happy for us. And my partner was far more excited than I was, and he I suppose I got, I started to get happy, and within 2 weeks of being pregnant, we were thinking about what our lives would look like with our new baby.
You're with Jess Strutt on the Focus program, ABC Radio Perth. So what sort of, how did things start changing in your lives in that early phase? What were their preparations, you know, those exciting preparations underway, Mandy?
Yeah, absolutely. So very quickly, we live in a one bedroom apartment. And so for us, we thought, wow, what changes do we need to make to accommodate for our new baby? We, of course, started thinking about names. We thought about how we would tell the exciting news to our family and, you know, nothing crazy like you see on Instagram these days, but we were excited about how we would tell them and who we would tell. things, even it got as far as this is completely stupid, but astrology plays no part in my life, but I was looking at what a March 13th baby would be like.
I imagine that's not too uncommon. I think other women may have done that too. Were you pleased with what you found?
Apparently they're quite emotional, but you know what? I just got so excited about what they could be like as a person. So, yeah, we were consumed straight away with how our lives would change, where our child would go to school, how we wanted to bring them up. And, of course, those discussions had happened before we got pregnant, but it just became a little bit more real when we found out we were.
Okay, and then what happened?
So miscarriage, again, was always in the back of my mind. Some girlfriends had gone through it. And I looked up symptoms of miscarriage and I didn't have any of them. So when we went to that first ultrasound, I actually felt quite confident. That day will always stick in my mind. I lay on the table and you're already feeling vulnerable. I had to take off my skirt and you're lying on this bed. He's performing the ultrasound and I don't know what I was expecting, but I never expected him to say, "Things don't look right. I can't see or hear a heartbeat." And from there, this sounds like such a terrible cliche, but it felt like a very bad dream for me. I was taken aback, even though I knew about miscarriage, but having no symptoms, that felt like a nasty joke, to be honest with you. My body was changing. You have the typical pregnancy symptoms of sore breasts, you feel nauseous at times. And unfortunately, that still happens after the operation. But he said he couldn't see a heartbeat and he wanted a second opinion. I knew he was very experienced. He had delivered quite a few of my girlfriend's babies. And so, to be honest with you, I can't even remember how I put my skirt back on. I remember the midwife saying she was sorry. I'll always remember that because that felt like a bit of a jolt back to reality. I sat next to my partner and I had never seen my partner look so disappointed and sad. And, of course, this isn't something that happens often. I suppose in a relationship, but again, his face for me was another jolt back to reality that things had not gone to plan. So we were rushed around the back corridors of the hospital, which I really appreciated, to an ultrasound clinic across the road. And, you know, at that day it was really shot. It was bright blue skies and I felt like, you know what, this feels wrong. Does the world not realise what I've just gone through? I don't know how we even crossed that busy road because we were like zombies. And we were taken to the ultrasound clinic, whisked away to a private lounge, which, again, I appreciated that. And it was confirmed that we had a miscarriage.
You were talking before that numb feeling when you find out, like you're almost a zombie when you walk out of the doctor's appointment and you found out that really difficult news. Who do you then tell about the miscarriage that day, Mandy?
Yeah, so I suppose my partner and I just wanted to feel it together, I suppose. But the first person I called was actually my mum. To be honest with you, I'd never heard my mum so upset when I told her. She was extremely apologetic, and it was incredibly hard having to break that news to her. And I then told my best friend, but the hardest call to make was actually to my workplace. I had a new manager and I had my procedure booked the very following day, I had to go to hospital. And having to call her, I have to say it was, I felt thankful that she was a woman, and I told her straight out what I had gone through, that I'd just had a miscarriage and I was booked in the hospital the next day. But it was one of the toughest things I had to do. It wasn't just a case of I had a cold, but we had lost.
Difficult, because what were you feeling? You were worried about judgment that it was a new boss?
Yeah, it was, I would never have told her that I was pregnant, obviously, and having to tell her about this loss. It felt so private, but I felt like I had to tell her in case I needed more time off if necessary. I was kind of thinking long term. I didn't know how my next week would look, and mentally, my doctor gave me the heads up that you're depleted of hormones after the surgery, so you would feel incredibly down. So I felt like I needed to be completely transparent so that she would understand, especially as a new boss, if I needed to take a week off work.
What about the reaction more broadly of colleagues? What was that like?
That was really hard because, understandably, you don't share with anyone that you're pregnant till after the first trimester. And so the following week I walked into work, and it was incredibly tough. I compare this to if someone was to lose their father, their mother, a brother, even a beloved pet, people acknowledge your loss. But I walked into work the following week, and I felt like obviously there was no acknowledgement, and that's fine because I'd never shared that with anyone. And you don't. Miscarriage is something in the shadows, and when you experience it, and you, obviously, like I said, women generally don't share their pregnancy till after the first trimester, after 13 weeks, but you miss the support network that you usually would. So I didn't hear from friends, of course, and there is no acknowledgement of the loss or trauma that you have just experienced, and that was hard.
Dr. Jade Bilardi, I want to bring you in here. You work as a researcher in this specific area. Is Mandy's a pretty familiar experience?
Hi, Jessica. And yes, it is. And I just wanted to say, to start off with, Mandy, I'm really sorry to hear about your miscarriage. That's what I'm hearing is very, very common. I think, as Mandy said, there's, you know, we have so many hopes and dreams attached to having a baby and a successful pregnancy, and we start planning right from the outset. That's just so common that, you know, we think of names and due dates and how we're going to decorate nurseries and things like that. And as Mandy touched upon then, you know, we have this sort of unwritten rule, the 12-week rule around not disclosing a pregnancy. And the reason we generally have that rule is because the risk of miscarriage decreases considerably after 12 weeks. But as Mandy said, what that often means is that very few people around us know that we're pregnant. And so when miscarriage occurs, we're often left feeling incredibly alone and isolated because people around us don't know, and therefore aren't there to support us necessarily in the way that we need.
This text has come in, no name on it, but my husband and I have been through 8 years and 13 IVF cycles of miscarriages. They were all early miscarriages, but the experience has left deep scars and was extremely traumatising. Luckily, we were stubborn, and our miracle boy-girl twins are now 4 years old. My cousin had a stillbirth at 28 weeks, a week after her baby shower. One miscarriage or many, it's hell. Thank you so much for sharing that personal story, and it's lovely to hear that you now have twins at 4 years old. You've got your hands full. Twins are hard work. Rich in North Perth says, my wife and I went through multiple miscarriages. The males are often ignored. We grieve. I still do. 17 years later, The worst was having people asking when we were going to have kids, having had the miscarriages. Rich, thanks for sharing that. Rich of North Perth. Now, you went into this area of research or became involved in it, Jade, because of a personal experiences in this. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, sure. So I've had three miscarriages myself whilst trying to have my children. And I think for me, I really, it was probably my experiences with healthcare professionals at the time that really motivated me to go into this area. And I'll explain a little further what I mean. So I had with my first miscarriage, I got pregnant, I got married and went on my honeymoon and came back pregnant. And like Mandy, I was only very new into a job. I think I was 1 week into a new job when I started bleeding and took myself off to the doctor one lunchtime. And I knew people quite close to me actually that had experienced miscarriage, but I naively, arrogantly, maybe I just didn't think it was going to happen to me. And so I went, my doctor referred me off for an ultrasound. I toddled off to the ultrasound, thinking that everything was going to be fine. And I was lying down on the bed when, the sonographer came in, and I very clearly, this is, as Mandy said also, it's almost burnt into my brain. I remember the sonographer doing the ultrasound and then just stopping and saying to me, "Oh, it's just a blighted ovum." And I looked up at her and I said, "Oh, sorry, what's a blighted ovum?" "Oh, it means your pregnancy started, but then it just stopped." And that was it.
Unbelievably insensitive.
Yes. And there was absolutely no empathy whatsoever. It's just so blunt, you know, direct. And that was it. You can, you know, clean yourself up, get dressed and off you go. And, you know, as Mandy said, it really was that whole out-of-body experience, you know. It was like a bad dream. I remember getting myself dressed, trying to walk out to reception with all these beautiful pregnant bellies around me, paying for the ultrasound, and I think I just got out the door and that was it. I just lost it, you know, burst into tears. And, yeah, so that was my first experience. And look, fortunately, it got better after that. I went and saw a lovely doctor who could see how distressed and upset I was, who referred me on to an obstetrician who was incredibly caring and saw me immediately, because she too had experienced miscarriage, and so she doesn't ever knock back seeing somebody who's had a miscarriage. So that was... yeah, it wasn't a very pleasant experience at all to have. And then I compare that to when I had my second miscarriage and I went into hospital for a D&C, and the lovely anaesthetist, he sat down with me to go through things and tell me what was going to happen. But the first thing that he said to me was, "I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry about your miscarriage. And he was just incredibly kind, and he walked me through every step of what was going to happen, and he told me he understood that I would be feeling sad and anxious. And that meant so much to me that day, that I actually went home for the first time ever, and about a week later I sat down and I wrote him a card just to thank him for his kindness and let him know how much that meant to me and how it really did help that day in what was an incredibly difficult day. And so I think that's really what motivated me, is looking back at those two experiences and just thinking, you know, there's got to be more sensitivity and more support. And, yeah, there's got to be a better way to support women, partners, family members, and raise awareness about the need to really... really get people understanding that this can be an incredibly painful thing that's associated with a lot of grief and anxiety and sadness for many people. And often it just takes a little bit of sensitivity and acknowledgement of that loss, and that goes such a long way.
I want to go to Jude because Jude's called in. Good morning, Jude. You've got some advice for what people should say.
Oh, no, it's not advice. It's just that I feel quite strongly as well about this, that more research and sensitivity and everything should be given to mums in this situation. And it is very, very difficult to express words. There are no words. But just I would like to say to these women, to the mums and to their babes, that I would just say I honour and respect them and their babies with love and kindness.
That's beautiful. You haven't gone through this, your experience yourself, Jude. You probably...
Oh, I had a miscarriage years ago, and I've never been able to have another baby. So I have at the other end of saying, you know, what, you have no children, and, you know, waiting for justification.
Yes.
And I don't. Oh, that's sad. Well, why is it sad? They have no idea, you know. So that's another side of the coin. But, yeah, let's just honour and respect these mums and their babies, you know, and say it. Yeah.
Jude, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in, Jude from Parmelia. They're sharing what she went through, a miscarriage many, many years ago, she said, and she had some advice for what people could say to someone who's miscarried, because we know that it can be really difficult to know what to say. So with me now, I've got Steve Kresos, and his wife and he, they've now got a three-year-old son, but they did experience a miscarriage, and he joins us now. Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, good morning. How you going?
Well, thanks so much for your time. Just tell us, how did it unfold for you and your wife?
Yeah, well, obviously we were planning on having a baby, and then we got pregnant, and we had our first scan, and everything was going well, and we were all excited and started planning for this baby. And unfortunately, the next scan that we went to, we turned up there, and during the ultrasound they found out that the baby had no heartbeat. And it had died in the week prior.
How did you feel, Steve?
Well, I can relate it to, you know, I was involved in an accident when I was younger when I lost my best mate, and it was the exact same feeling, the feeling of loss and grief. Like, that was, it wasn't just you know, nothing in there. That was our baby. It was our child in there. And, yeah, the feeling was just of grief and loss was overwhelming for both of us.
You obviously had each other to support, but who else did you reach out to from the male partner's perspective? Who else did you reach out to?
So I was very, very lucky to be involved in a program where we have lots of counsellors. And one of the counsellors there had been through the exact same situation before, and reaching out to other people who have been through what we'd been through before, and just talking them through it and letting us know how they dealt with it, and really just told us that just being there for each other is the most important.
Were you surprised by how strongly you felt in that grieving process? You said it was similar to losing a young friend when you were, you know, a young child. Were you surprised by the reaction that you had?
Yeah, I was, you know, because I've known people or couples that have gone through it before, and they say that the woman is more attached, more emotionally attached, but yeah, I was really rocked. I was devastated.
How did you had your support of your mates and someone else you said that had gone through it?
Yeah.
How did how did your colleagues and your friends' reaction differ to you compared to your wife? Did you feel like you had different experiences there?
Yeah, definitely. So they seemed to all perceive that she would be more attached to it and would be going through more grief and emotion. And which she was, and I had to make sure I was there for her, because, you know, it's really important for them. They've had the loss inside them at that time. And I think the most important role that I had there was to be there for her. Also, she was there for me. So, and yeah, I had really good workmates who come up and support me straight away. And that was the key to getting through it all.
Steve Kresos, have you got some advice for other partners, men who may be listening today, about dealing with the grieving process when if they experience this?
Yeah, 100%. So the one thing that you tend to do as a male is think that you have to be strong enough to deal with everything yourself, and you can't talk about it, and you've got to do it alone, when actually the truth is the only way to healing is to talk about it, to talk to others, speak to find people who've been through it and speak to others and let people know that you've actually gone through it and dealt with it, and it makes the whole process so much easier.
Steve Krezos, thank you very much for your time. It's fantastic to get a bloke's perspective, a partner's perspective, and we wish you all the best, and thanks for sharing that story.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Jade, I might just bring you in here. I mean, again, we were talking earlier about men largely being ignored, or partners, female partners too. Why do you think that is? Is it what Steve was just talking about there, that we kind of expect men to, you know, they weren't as attached as this general feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, from our research with men, what we've found is that most support and acknowledgement is directed towards women, as are most resources counselling. It's often directed towards women, and men sort of get forgotten when miscarriage occurs a lot of the time. And certainly, I mean, it's fantastic to hear that Steve had that level of support, because certainly with the men that we've interviewed, they didn't have that level of support so much around them in terms of their family and friends, and they certainly often felt like they were a passenger in their own pregnancy loss, is the way that it got termed. So,
and Mandy's nodding her head here, very much so. So I'll get a response from you here, Mandy. What has been the response to your partner going through this?
Have been incredibly lucky to have that support. I can share with you, my partner, we've gone through a lot, and he said that this was one of the darkest moments for him. And he was expected, he felt, his perception was he was expected to just perform and be supportive. And unfortunately, the time that we lost our baby, he was going through some, it was a really busy work period for him, and he had to actually go away for work the following week. And I was supportive of that. I thought, I absolutely acknowledge that he's lost, just like I have, and I wanted him to go away to be distracted. But I don't know if that was the best for him. He went on this work trip, and he was, like I said, expected to just perform for work. He was put under a lot of pressure, and he felt like he had to put on a face with people that he was meeting for business. His boss is fantastic, I have to say, and that's the similarity with Steve, that he did allow a couple of days off, and he was very supportive, and he would check in, my partner, and he really appreciated that, but not everyone is like that. It was a struggle for him, and he was probably like me. He wanted to just stay in bed and not be out in the world.
Understandable. Julie, stay on the line. I'm going to come to your call in a moment. But it's sounding, Jade Bilardi, like there's plenty of room for improvement here, not only from us, the work colleagues, the mates, but also from some healthcare professionals. You had one good and one bad experience.
Yeah, look, I mean, absolutely. And I think there's some very simple things we can do. Obviously, you know, there are a lot of barriers for healthcare professionals. The most frequently cited barrier is time. You know, so there are a lot of structural barriers there, but there are also, and there are some fantastic healthcare professionals out there. I need to say that. But I think there's some very.
The majority, simple, hopefully.
Absolutely. But I do think that there sometimes can become a complacency or a desensitization to people's loss, particularly if there's, you know, healthcare professionals that are seeing this all the time. There can unfortunately become a bit of desensitization to that. And I think the message is to remember that, you know, this is a real loss to people, and this is a new experience, or it may not be a new experience, but, you know, this really often means so much to people, and there's a lot of grief associated with it. And I think, you know, just showing some sensitivity to that and acknowledging the loss is really important. I know for a lot of our women, they felt very frustrated when, you know, they got told, you know, oh, it's common. Oh, it happens to one in four. You know, one in four, it's very common. And you know, healthcare professionals often do that to normalise it and also to mitigate, you know, women often have a lot of guilt and self-blame that happens at the time of miscarriage, wondering if they did something wrong, they ate something wrong, they, took something that they shouldn't have. And so, you know, we find that healthcare professionals often tell women that, but that's not what they need to hear at the time.
Okay.
You know, that doesn't really help.
Julie's had a good experience, so let's go to her on the phone line. But in terms of the actual acknowledgement and the care that you got in that experience?
Okay, at the time, I'd been living there for a long time, and my first miscarriage, I had two. My first one was a shock because we just happily got pregnant and we'd actually told people and hadn't sort of really done much about it, and then we thought of about 9 weeks we should probably go for a dating scan so that we knew when to have the other scan, because you don't generally get a lot of scans under the health system in the UK, probably similar to here. And so I think we paid about £50 to go for this dating scan, and it was a great clinic and they were really nice, but as soon as the screen came up I could see that it was a blighted ovum, and I didn't know very much about it in those days. The woman was lovely, but she said, oh, I don't think you're quite sure of your date. So I said, no, I'm pretty sure of my date. So I know I'm at least 9 weeks and there's no baby in there. And she was saying, oh, well, I'd like you to come back next week. And that kind of wasn't helpful to me because it prolonged it. But I think my partner kept, at the time, hopeful that there'd be a miracle. So I was fairly resigned to it. But I think what drove me from there was to be as well informed as I could be. So I did a lot of research. And when I had the second one about a year, or sort of 10 months later, I'd already seen a heartbeat, so that was a bit harder. But it meant that I was referred very quickly to one of the top miscarriage specialists in the UK at the time, who's an amazing professor who's actually now a client of mine, and we're still friends, and he's heading up a huge hospital in Doha. And his attitude was that no woman should have more than one. And at the time, the UK generally had a sort of a structure that the GPs wouldn't really refer women to a specialist until they'd had about three, which was shocking to find out, but I didn't have to go through that. And I was over 40 at the time, so the attitude was, oh, well, you know, it's your age. In the end, it had absolutely nothing to do with my age, and it was to do with autoantibodies for thyroid. I'd always tested normal for thyroid, but they hadn't delved deeper, and, of course, that's what this miscarriage specialist did. And I went on very successfully, very short time later, to have a wonderful pregnancy and a beautiful birth and a wonderful child that's now 12.
Wow. Congratulations to you.
But I think it's definitely... there's an area that isn't researched enough, and we do need a lot more research into the reasons why. I was very fortunate to be put under Professor Conjay's care, because in the miscarriage clinic that I went into, I was scanned very regularly, which was incredibly reassuring. And that was basically the reason for it, was to reassure women that had miscarriages that, you know, there was a possibility you weren't going to necessarily have another one. You were under good care, because a lot of the stress of fear of having another one can, you know, often lead to more miscarriages in itself.
That's right. Julie from Fremantle, thank you very much for sharing your experience, and it's good to hear that you did get good care in a sense in the end for what is, of course, a very difficult experience. Few of you have texted in. Jess, my wife, had miscarriages in 2005. We were on holidays with family interstate at the time. We were both shattered. The family support was invaluable. When I got back to work, I found out that a colleague's wife had miscarried more than once. So I actually had some compassion there, which was great, says Jeff. Thanks, Jeff. This one here is someone who has had a second trimester miscarriage at 16 weeks. There was lots of guilt, and Jade was talking about that earlier, that it was somehow my fault. despite all the reassurances from doctors that it wasn't. My husband felt helpless trying to support me whilst dealing with his own grief. We received an overwhelming amount of well-intentioned pity from friends, family who'd lost at 12 weeks, which only compounded the feeling of isolation. A close friend quietly spread the news through my friend and colleague group with my permission and asked everyone to respect my privacy, which helped immensely. Thank you for that text. On that issue, I mean, what is best practice in terms of how we approach this, particularly in a workplace, Jade, where it can be very difficult because you may not be as close as a friend or a family member?
As we said before, it depends also if you've spoken to colleagues or your boss about, you know, actually being pregnant.
Is that a good idea, what that person on the text line just said, of telling, asking a friend to spread that news if you don't feel comfortable telling people?
Yeah, look, absolutely. That's, I think, if that makes it easier for you, then yes, you know. For a lot of people, women and men, it really does help, you know, to have people around to talk to about it, particularly people that have experienced it and so they feel, you know, they understand what they're going through. But for some people, and, you know, I found this myself, it can be really painful having to tell other people over and over again that you've experienced miscarriage. So if you do find it easier to ask somebody else to quietly spread the word, then, you know, if that's what works for you, if that's what's best for you, then I think that's a great idea.
You know, I suppose everyone is different. I come at from a different, well, this was just how I dealt with it, but I felt that the more I told people, I felt like it was less of a taboo subject. I did find some comfort in finding out some other friends had gone through it because I could speak to them about it. So that was almost like a therapy for me, being able to turn to certain friends. And the difference with me was I did start telling people about it. And for me, it just felt better getting it out in the open. Because in a way, again, this is just my experience of the more I feel like I talk about it, maybe someone else who goes through it might come to me later on and tell me they need support. So I found talking to people made me feel better. On the other hand, my partner is more private and I absolutely respect that. Some people don't want to get bombarded with questions, and that's how they deal with it. And I absolutely respect that.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I agree wholeheartedly with Mandy. You know, for what we've found is that, you know, for most people, it really helps talking to other people about what they're going through, and just having people listen to them and allowing them to grieve and talk about how they're feeling. And as Mandy touched upon also, it helps break down this silence and stigma that surrounds miscarriage a lot of the time. You know, it's been fantastic to see recently more celebrities coming out in the media talking about their experiences of miscarriage and their journeys to parenthood and saying, you know, it's not that easy. And I think that's really important. We need to talk about it more.
A couple of texts on that, actually. Mary in Basso. G'day, Mary. Beautiful spot. She says, now I think everyone should be more open about pregnancy and the miscarriage so that they get the support they need and they deserve. Thank you very much for that. This person says, my heart goes out to the couples who've lost their little ones. We were very sad but also glad when we knew when our son and daughter-in-law lost their little ones so we could offer our sympathy and support. It is a loss as any other and it needs to be acknowledged. However, people are unable to do so if they don't know. That's a good point, and that's the point Mandy made at the start with colleagues. JD Morley's texted in. It's good to hear. She's had a great health care experience in terms of, you know, the care that she got and the support. And Jade says, I will never forget waking with my general anaesthetic post-DNC to a beautiful nurse stroking my hair, wiping my tears and talking softly to me as I grieved. Her empathy and care gave me such strength and is why I've gone on to have my two children at St John of God, Mount Lawley. Their care and support is genuine, progressive and family-focused. Jade, thank you, because it's nice to hear that people are getting good care when they're going through what is a very, very difficult situation. How would you handle things differently now in terms of telling colleagues? Would you change anything there at all?
Look, if we were to get pregnant again, to be honest with you, I still wouldn't tell people till after the 12 or 13 weeks. I still feel like that is private, and it's, in a way, it's because of the expectations. It's my choice to tell someone if I was to have a miscarriage. But I don't want to hear from someone, oh, how's your pregnancy going? I don't want to hear that. So if we get pregnant the next time, like I said, that will still be completely private between me and my partner.
In terms of telling colleagues when you had the miscarriage?
I suppose I am different that I've had one, and if I was to have three or six, like some other women have, I might feel differently, and perhaps I can speak so openly about this right now because I have gone through it once, and I can't say if I had gone through it twice or three times that I'd be as open. So I think it's an individual choice. I can say that the things that made me feel better, and if you know anyone who's had a miscarriage, it's really simple. It's acknowledge the loss. It's just saying you're sorry that you've lost your baby. And just like we've heard with one of the texters, it's showing some kindness. I will never forget that my colleague on the other side of the country sent me a care pack when I returned to work.
Very sweet.
And that's just meant so much to me because I knew she was thinking about me. And the other thing is, don't expect people to just get over it. I read about some women take years. We heard someone else who had happened maybe 16 years prior. We just don't get over it.
And there's a text in exactly on that. I've had 7 pregnancies and lost the babies at various stages. What really pisses me off is when someone is having a bad day with their children and turns to you and says, oh, you're lucky you don't have children. And there's that insensitivity. And it's often, you know, it's well-meaning. I don't think people do this deliberately, but it's about having that sensitivity in dealing with all of these issues. Look, my big thanks to Dr. Jade Bilardi, Senior Research Fellow in the Central Clinical School at Monash University, and she very much is focused on improving miscarriage support for not only the women but the partners, the men and the families, and also to Mandy, 35-year-old woman who has recently gone through this experience and had some advice to all of you on how do we talk to our colleagues and our friends and families about this one.